There we go. Sorry about that. Thought I'd switch myself up. I was very excited to hear Sean share about his mission trip. One of the things that I love about our church is that we are a local body committed to taking the good news into our world, our Jerusalem, our Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And it always excites me to hear when people that are part of our body come up and share about being involved in that process. You know, we've been going through the book of John, and our goal is to go through the first 12 chapters. And we hope to do that here within a month or so, and then we're going to take an extended break and come back to John sometime in 2012. You know, these first 12 chapters is the public ministry of Jesus. Chapter 1 introduces Jesus as the Word, introduces John the Baptist and the disciples. And then chapters 2 through 12, those 11 chapters, are the public ministry of Jesus. Now, Jesus' public ministry was 3 to 3.5 years. And John condenses that into these 11 chapters. And he does it by picking certain stories, certain messages, certain miracles. Out of the hundreds and hundreds of miracles Jesus did during those 3 years, we don't know how many he did, John chooses to highlight 7 miracles. And then, of course, John has those 7 great I Am statements. And we're going to cover 5 of them in these first 12 chapters. Today we're going to hear 2 of them. I am the gate or the door, and I am the good shepherd. And John's goal, his purpose, is to show that Jesus is indeed the Son of God and the promised Messiah, that he came to this earth and died on a cross for the sins of the world, rose again, and gives true eternal spiritual life to anyone who trusts in the person and work of Jesus. That's what John's about. And so we come now to chapter 10 and the message of the Good Shepherd. And when I read through this chapter, the first thing that came to my mind was my father-in-law, Mr. Ben Peterson. Now, he was here a few weeks ago, and I hope you guys had a chance to meet him. One of the finest, if not the finest, man I've ever known. The hardest working man I've ever known. Loves the Lord. You know, I'm an Indian boy from the city. An Indian city boy. You know, I grew up in Washington, D.C. was half my childhood. My other half was here in Dallas. We moved here in 75. And so I've been in the city all my life. And, you know, God, he has his plans, right? I married a country girl. Stacy's from the country. She grew up on a farm. And so I got a chance for the past 23 years to experience on some level what it means to be in the country and and farm life. Now, you know, we have 4 kids, but when we first got married, of course, we didn't have any kids. And then we had Matthew, and then we had Jacob. And so we used to go down there quite a bit, probably maybe once a month. And I used to follow my father-in-law around the farm. Now, I used to think I was helping him, but I don't really think I was helping him. I think I was more kind of in the way. But I used to follow him around and spend those days with him on the farm, you know, walking around with him, hanging out with him. And we got to be very close friends during that time. We used to just kind of talk and spend time together. It was meaningful for both of us. I don't think that in his wildest dreams he thought he was going to get an Indian boy like me for a son-in-law. So anyways, like I said, God works in mysterious ways, doesn't he? But his ways are good. But he raises cattle, and so he has herds of cattle. He has his pasture, his farmland divided into kind of separate pastures. And in these different pastures, he has separate herds of cattle. And then he also has a few horses. I'll tell you a funny story, then I'm going to tell you a story about how he deals with his cattle. One day, we were walking in one of his pastures, and it was one with horses in it, like maybe 4 or 5 horses. And so the horses were off to the side. We didn't really see them, and we saw them just out of the corner of my eye. I saw them. And we were walking right through the middle of this pasture, and it was a hot, sunny day. And, you know, the vegetation or whatever was about knee high. So we were kind of tromping through this hay and vegetation, whatever. Unbeknownst to me, one of his horses had come up behind us and was coming up right behind us. And neither one of us heard him. And it was a younger horse, but it was still full size. And this horse, I don't know what I did to this horse, but it reached down and grabbed me right here in my neck with its mouth. And I just want to tell you, I was really scared. I mean, I was just scared. I was like, oh my goodness, what is this horse doing to me? What did I do to this horse? So it didn't really break the skin, didn't really hurt, but boy, did it scare me. I didn't know horses bit people. So my father-in-law, you know, he was laughing. He wasn't helping me. He was just like, you know, laughing away. He finally just grabbed the horse and pushed it away. And, you know, by that time, I don't know if I was on my knees or what, but he's like, picks me up and just says, Bob, you got to let him know who's boss. Those animals, they'll play with you. And I think he was just kind of playing around with me. I don't know. But anyways, that was kind of one crazy thing that happened to me on the farm. I can probably write a whole book of the Indian boy on the farm. But anyways, you know, he had cattle subdivided in these herds. And when he would walk into the pasture, he would call the cattle. And he had his own language almost. You know, he used these words. And those cows, when he walked in the pasture, they would come to him quickly. And each herd had maybe, you know, 30 cows in them. And he would walk just right in the middle of them. And they would let him. You know, he would touch them. He would, you know, put his hands on them. He had names for several of them. He would talk to them. Now, when I was following him, when I followed right behind him, they would go from being real at peace to getting real jittery because they didn't know me. And so if I tried to touch one of them, they would back off and they would get all nervous. And the more nervous and jittery they got, the more nervous and jittery I got, because these are like hundreds and hundreds of pounds each and they got horns and they kick. And so I kind of got a little jittery and nervous myself. But because they didn't know me, they didn't trust me and would walk away from me. But because they knew my father-in-law, they trusted him. And my father-in-law, I watched him over the years. You know, he cares for his cattle. You know, a lot of times they'll have like some kind of problem, like a skin infection. He'll care and tend to those. Or there's a problem with their horns, or the problem with their hooves, or problems when a new baby calf is born. And he goes in there and he cares for them and takes care of them and fixes those issues with them. This is a picture of Jesus. He is a good shepherd. We who are his followers are his sheep. He cares for us. He loves us. He knows us. We're gonna read about that today as we look at John chapter 10. Now, this picture of the good shepherd, this picture of shepherding was a common picture then. It was a common job then. Back then in Palestine, 2,000 years ago, shepherds were commonplace. And shepherds tending their flocks of sheep was very common to see. So the people understood this story. And in fact, in a lot of developing worlds today, you'll still see that, won't you? I don't know if those of you who've gone to developing worlds, developing countries, you'll see shepherds, you know, with their flocks of goats or sheep or whatever. It's still a way of life that's commonplace in many countries. In addition, it was a common picture in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the nation of Israel is often pictured as a flock of sheep, and God is pictured as the shepherd overlooking the sheep. And the prophets and the priests and the leaders of Israel are under-shepherds in a way, that shepherd in the name of God. And the Old Testament talks about how some of them did a bad job. Their motives were impure. It's also a picture we see in the New Testament also. So this was a common picture that Jesus is bringing up as he talks about him being the good shepherd. Let's look at John 10 together. Now, we're going to cover the whole chapter, 42 verses for the most part. We're going to concentrate, though, on these passages that deal with Jesus as the good shepherd. There's a couple of passages, namely verses 19 through 24 and 31 through 42, that discuss some of the response of the Jews and some of the back and forth that went with Jesus. We're not going to really cover those today for the sake of time. If you have any questions or you want to talk about those with me, please come see me afterwards. I'll be glad to talk to you about it. But we're going to really concentrate on this idea of Jesus as the good shepherd. Now, there's several kind of pictures, if you will, of shepherding from this passage. The first picture that we get is verses 1 through 6, and that is what I call the common pen. What I mean by a common pen is that when a given village would have probably several shepherds in that village, and they would take their flocks out at night for several days, or they'll take their flocks out for several days, and they would come in at nighttime, and they would all put their sheep in the same pen. And that pen was a common pen for the village. It had a gate. There was a hired gatekeeper, and that allowed the shepherd to see his family for that night. And in the morning, the shepherd would come back and take his sheep out. He'll take his herd out of all the mixed herds, or mixed flocks, I should say, and take them out to pasture. You know, I saw a picture of this myself when I was in Kenya. We were visiting with a Maasai tribe, a Maasai village. The Maasai is one of the largest tribes in Kenya, and they live their lives according to the old ways, the ways their ancestors did. They reject technology. So no cell phones, no guns. Everything is like it's been done for hundreds of years. So when you walk into a Maasai village, what they do is all the houses are built in a circle. And they're all connected. There's no gaps between the little homes. And then on each side of the village is a gate made of sticks and wood. And so what happens is at night they bring in all the animals from the village and they come in, and the village itself is the common pen, if you will. And they put up the gates on either end. Now, in Africa, there's lots of wild animals. There's tigers and lions and hyenas, etc. So any animal that doesn't get into the pen will almost certainly be killed out in the wild. Now, the Maasai, they station guards. So if any animal attempts to come in, the Maasai will kill it or be killed. And they use the old weapons, the spears and bows and arrows and knives, no guns. It's pretty amazing to see. So it's kind of like that. There was a common pen in the village. And so when the shepherd comes in the morning to withdraw his flock from all the mixed flocks, he comes in through the front gate. The gatekeeper knows him, opens the gate for him. There's no deception. And he comes in, and his sheep know him, and he knows his sheep. We might think, to me or to you, all sheep or all cows, whatever, look the same. But the shepherd knows his sheep. And all he has to do is go into that common pen and call for his sheep, and they will follow him out. And so he can easily withdraw his flock from all the other flocks. And then they will follow him as he leads them out to pasture. That's the picture we get in this first section. I'm going to read verses 3 through 5 to you. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought all of them out, when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow because they know his voice. They will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. You know, a robber or a thief has to come in under the cover of night and climb the wall to get to the sheep. If a stranger comes and calls for the sheep, they won't follow him. They will follow the voice of the shepherd. The picture that we get here from this is a picture of intimate relationship. Intimate relationship. There is an intimate relationship between the sheep and the shepherd. Jesus, as the good shepherd, has an intimate relationship with his followers. Those of us who are the followers of Christ, who have placed our faith in Christ as our Savior, we have an intimate relationship with Jesus. I'd like to ask you a question. What is the state of your relationship with God? What is the state of your relationship with God? The picture now switches from the common pen to what I call the pasture pen in verses 7 through 10. When a shepherd took out his flock, he would spend maybe days out in the countryside with his sheep.